Hi, Tracy. Hi, Stuart.
Morning, guys.
Hi, Megan. Hi, Tracy.
We will go ahead and just jump in. No questions today, so anything from you guys is welcomed.
How are you doing, Stuart?
I had a rough weekend from my gut's perspective.
Yeah.
I don't know. I ate out for dinner on Saturday night, and then I had something happen that got me emotionally pretty twisted up. And the result was my gut hasn't been happy since. Seems a little better this morning, but I'm driving, so I can't see either of you.
Ah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Those are two things that, can definitely compound each other when it comes
Yeah.
to the gut issues. Yeah.
So hoping it finds its way back on track. On the good side, last Wednesday was probably the best day of skiing I've had in maybe my life.
Really, that's
Wow.
great.
Oh, it was awesome. Yeah. There was fresh snow. It had snowed for 24 hours and quit about the time we got there.
Perfect.
And it was, I'm not gonna say as good a powder as you get in the Northwest, but pretty close. And I did things like ski in the trees, and I just felt like the trees were jumping out of my way.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
Yes. I've had
How
a
are you doing, Tracy?
rough week also, still getting not getting any better and even getting worse, I would say. So
Oh, I'm sorry.
the low fat approach is not helping yet, at least, or lower
Okay.
fat, and trying to navigate that. I realize just how much fat I eat, and
Yeah.
it's a lot.
If you've been doing it for about a week now.
Right, a little less, but
Okay.
yeah.
Okay. Typically, if fat is the problem, you'll see it, you'll see symptoms improve relatively quickly.
That's kind of what
So,
I thought. Well, also,
if especially, sorry, go ahead.
I've been pretty constipated. So whenever something does come out, it's from a few days ago. So I think maybe the response might be delayed as well.
Okay, gotcha. I was just gonna say, if you feel like restricting fat is causing, some dietary stress, and it's not really doing much just because you're more restricted, it may just be worth, not trying so hard, because again, you should probably see the results relatively quickly. Again, if you're constipated, that kind of throws a wrench into things. But there are some things, you can try in the short term to m move things through your system. I don't recall if we've talked about things like Trifla before, but that's helpful. There are a lot of potential things to try. In the short term, are you still doing the or do you still have some of that Calm around with the magnesium citrate? Okay, do you take it on a regular basis at all?
No, I have not.
You, so that will have a little bit of a laxative effect. So you could try, starting with like a teaspoon and working your way up a little bit. Not in my mind, that's not a long-term solution, but it can just kind of help start moving things through. Did you
And
ever the motility activator would be another one. But I think
Iberogast,
I
or what's
well no that there Iberogast is a prokinetic, but another one is motility activator. I think I mentioned it before. It has ginger and artichoke leaf extract.
okay. And that's what it's called, is motility activator. By
Yeah, there's
whom?
that one's by Integrative Therapeutics. There are a couple of products very similar. Orthomolecular has one as well, but I think Integrative Therapeutics is the one
Okay.
I typically recommend.
And that's all, just constipation relief,
If you start
potentially.
rolling
Through
a
different
hole, what the
mechanisms.
fuck am I supposed to think?
Nope.
Oh.
You're not
You
on
okay,
mute,
Stuart?
Stuart.
Oh, sorry. My apologies.
That's all
No, that's
right.
okay. Is everything okay?
Yeah,
Okay.
just somebody who's trying looked like they were gonna pull out in front of me.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's Tracy, constipation really through different mechanisms. And okay. Again, I want to make sure that what you're trying, you're able to see the results of what you're trying if there is a result to be seen. And as you mentioned, the being backed up and being constipated can kind of close some of those interventions.
Right.
So it might be worth kind of trying to get bowels moving first and then, you know, seeing how you react.
Sure. And, you know, as much or more than the constipation is the consistency. And like yesterday was, you know, I hadn't gone in 2 or 3 days and went a teeny tiny bit that, you know, gave no relief, but was extremely messy. So it's kind of soft coming out. Like, and that's the whole, how do you rate what this is, you know, like Bristol scale wise, but then just very pasty, messy, and, you know, belly's not feeling good.
And that can be, you know, if you are backed up and you're for some reason not having complete bowel movements, that can also be a reason for some of those messy stools. Yeah. So I think there's multiple factors here to work from or with, which is, you know, a good thing and a bad thing at the same time. And I think that, again, like getting things moving before deciding whether or not something is working is probably going to be the best way forward. And then that'll allow you some relief too, because if your stomach and your gut isn't feeling good, that's very likely related to, you know, what's going on with being constipated.
It's constipated, consistency, and just both of those leading to stomach not feeling, or constipated probably leading to stomach not feeling good.
Yeah. Unless you've added something to your diet, if you're eating more carbohydrates and less fat, that could be causing you some stomach problems, but I'm guessing it's more related to just not fully evacuating, and being backed up.
Yeah, I was really kind of hoping it was, like, in reading about fat malabsorption, like, oh, a lot of this sounds like that really could be it. You know, not that I wanted that, or not that you want anything, you know, whatever you find out you can't or shouldn't have or need to work around or support is not good news, but it sounded like that could be a potential answer. So
I wouldn't cross it off the list yet.
Yeah. And I've been doing many meals, not every time, but ginger or fennel seeds before a meal.
Great.
That's supposed to help with bile production. Is that right?
Digestive secretions, whether it's bile, whether it's, you know, enzymes, stomach acid, that kind of thing. Yeah.
And I don't want to start this yet, but if I were going to go back on the supplements I was taking when things turned around the last time,
the healthy gut stuff,
the healthy gut stuff, or an alternative that is, you think would be similar. I do have some of the healthy gut stuff left. So I guess if I'm going to start those, how many would you take? Like, I was taking either 2 or 3 per meal, every meal. So that was 6 to 9 per day of both HCL and enzymes.
Oh, okay.
So a lot.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of ways to go about this. One is to take the minimal dose, minimum possible dose, just one of each, and see how you do. The other is to go back to what you knew was helping and just to kind of jumpstart the process, and then you can back things down. Mm-hmm. If you're feeling a little discouraged and if your gut's not feeling well, I would probably take the latter approach where you jump in with, you know, a little bit of a higher dose, especially if you know that you tolerate, especially the HCL just fine. Mm-hmm. And then you get things moving and then you can slowly back off if needed.
Yeah. To see how much I have left, because, you know, 9 a day, you go through them pretty darn quick.
Mm-hmm.
And
maybe you do that with HCL and you're increasing that dose, and the enzymes you don't do that with, because the enzymes or the HCL, you can get a, like I mentioned last time, a very inexpensive betaine HCL with pepsin. You know, so maybe you take that approach, which is kind of a middle ground.
You finish what I have and then get a different brand.
Yeah. And I was saying maybe you start with a higher dose of one of them, being the HCL in this case. And then because the enzymes are a little bit more expensive, then, you know, you start with just one of those a day and increase if you need to. You may not need to, because it doesn't really sound like you ever figured out, like, was it the HCL, was it the enzymes, was it both? So,
and
this
I was
might
taking the butyrate too at the time. So
yeah, this just might be a way to kind of tease that out a little bit. If you started with the higher dose of the HCL, you can even just start with that and not the enzymes. Or you could start with both, one of the enzymes, you know, three of the HCL with pepsin, and you know, kind of modulate from there as needed.
Enzymes, do you have another source you would recommend?
Yeah, there's two options. One is to do like a pancreatic enzyme product. The other would be to do more of a more similar to the healthy gut product. Let me see if I can pull up the one.
I don't think there's anything healthy gut wise that made it super specific as to why that one worked. If sure. there is, it's worth the money. I mean, but yeah. Okay.
Potentially, but probably not.
And I decreased the probiotic from 2 to 1 just a couple weeks ago. I may increase that again too.
Yeah, no problem doing that.
Any of these specific, like any of the hydrochloric acid, is that what it was called, with pepsin, that you put into my Wellevate account, or should I just look for one that I think is a reasonable price and which is fine?
They're all basically the same, I think. Hang on, let me.
So is that correct? Different. Hydrochloric acid. Am I saying it right?
Okay, yeah, so Thorn has a good one. Designs for Health has a good one. Pure Encapsulations.
Last week. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Those are all good brands. I'm just looking for a good digestive enzyme alternative. Give me a moment here. The one that's probably closest to healthy gut is, and I don't know price wise what the difference is Digestive Enzymes Ultra from Pure Encapsulations. They actually have one with HCL, but it might be worth kind of just separating them for the sake of being able to titrate up or down as needed. I would have to look deeper into the actual. Yeah, I would probably go with that Pure Encapsulations one, just because it's. It looks like, let me just see. Yeah, that's the one I would go with. And they have a 180 cap option and a 90 cap option. So if you wanted, if you don't want to buy the bigger bottle, you could go with the smaller bottle at first.
That's how I end up with giant bottles of things I don't use, but I have a hard time not buying the better value.
I know. It does. It only looks like you save a couple dollars.
Okay. If that's the case, I probably will start with smaller, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's maybe. Probably the route I would go if you want to try something else.
So first, trying to work on constipation to even be able to have a better assessment of if lower fat's working or how things are going, because being constipated and having all that backup is going to throw off any assessment, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I have the Calm, and you mentioned Motility Activator by Integrative Therapeutics. And you say Trifala I don't.
Triphala. Yeah, it's a blend of three herbs. I want to say they're like Ayurvedic herbs, but they've actually been shown to help modulate the gut microbiome and provide some constipation relief through a different mechanism of action as those other ones. So that might be, you know, if you wanted to, there's no reason you couldn't try all these things at once. But that would be another tool in the toolbox that I would consider. There's another product out there called, let's see if I can find it.
I've been doing an Ayurvedic tea combination that I used to do a long time ago. That's fennel seeds, cardamom, cumin, and coriander.
Nice.
Put it a thermos of boiling water, close it up, and then sip on it slowly through the day.
Sounds good. Another something, and you know, again, I don't want to give you too many things because, you know, you may only need one, right? But there's another, and maybe you try to eat kiwis instead of taking this, but there's a product called Phloe, Phloe, that's basically a kiwi extract that's been shown in, I think, two or three clinical trials to help with constipation. I want to say that taking a concentrated form of something is different than just the whole food, and there are pros and cons to each. But I believe, like, you know, I looked into it and it was like three kiwis a day would be relatively comparable to something like this. So you could try to increase your you know,
the kiwi consumption.
Kiwi consumption. Or try this Phloe product as well. But I don't have as much experience with that one. I would probably say like Calm is a no-brainer since you already have it on board. Yeah. You know, one of the Prokinetics motility activator and or the Iberogast, and then the Triphala would be kind of top three for me.
Yeah, I can tell you that kiwis definitely have an effect on some people that have constipation.
Okay.
My partner, one of my friends, has a kiwi bush that's totally out of control, and so we get as many kiwis as we want in December and January, and we got a whole bunch recently, and my partner had problems with it with basically loose stools because she ate so many.
Good to know. And so, I do think the constipation is related to the consistency, related to this turn of events. Like, this is how it kind of used to be. So, you know, I don't see it as something totally like, well, I'm just coincidentally dealing with constipation now. Let's get that taken care of and see what the consistency is like. Like, there, this is kind of back to how it was. And then it, like, if it goes to how it was then, I would go through periods of diarrhea. And then I'm not going for a while and just kind of ebbing and flowing through that. But the poor quality and consistency and messy remaining constant through all of that. Mm-hmm. Whereas historically, like, before winter of 2019, I mean, I've never had an awesome gut and I've always dealt with constipation, but it used to be not go for a few days, have one nice big one, and then move on, you know, a more classic constipation. And sometimes that would come with stomach pains and, you know, constipation type of feelings, but it seemed more like textbook constipation, whereas this is not. It just feels different and hard to describe, and then the messy to the point of impeding my life, like how long it takes. And we got a bidet, so that feels better now, but
yeah,
you know, not getting so sore. Mm-hmm. And also I got my cholesterol test blood work back, so it was before starting AIP, just so December of 21, it was 203, and now it's up to 288 or 83.
Okay.
And each marker in between, you know, has gone up because I've had the blood work done a couple of times, and I'm through it raising, and I knew why it was raising. I'm increasing my meat intake, my red meat intake. Like, I know there's a reason for it. It wasn't just, you know, something my body was doing, you know, not terribly concerned, but as it consistently continues to go up, including the LDL, which is pretty high too. You know, what are your thoughts on that now? LDL is 158, but HDL is 109.
Yeah, it's quite. Are both HDL and LDL going up to like together, or is LDL going up more so?
Let me see. Got logged out. I mean, they've both gone up some, definitely, but to see just what I need to look here. So in October of 22, HDL was 96. In March, it was 92 HDL. In October, it was 96. And now it's 109. LDL in March, it was 127. In October, it was 137. And now it's 158.
Okay. So technically, go ahead.
No, total went from in March 232, October 247, and now 283.
Okay.
And it was 203 in the previous December.
Mm-hmm. So it is going up. You know, your LDL is still technically within the optimal range as defined by the all-cause mortality literature, which goes up to 170. There are plenty of doctors who would think that, you know, that's too high, and also vice versa. Your HDL is quite high. You know, typically like 100 is the higher point there. That doesn't mean that that's a bad thing per se. It's hard to say what's going on with HDL. To be honest, I don't know. I don't have a great answer for you. Remind me, does heart disease run in your family?
Yes.
Only men or women as well?
Women who have high cholesterol and have been treated for that. None of my aunts have had heart attacks or open heart surgeries. Just my grandpa, as far as I know.
Okay. You know, I'll tell you what I tell everyone. You're kind of like in this borderline phase, and your HDL and your triglycerides, I assume your triglycerides still look quite good.
63.
Yeah.
They were in the 40s, but good. So a little, but yeah.
The only way to really know what's going on with like the LDL, for example, would be, you know, you could run a more advanced test to look at oxidized LDL and LDL particle count and particle size and all of that. Or you can get, you know, the gold standard would be a coronary artery CT angiogram that looks at both the soft and the hard plaque, or you could get a coronary artery calcium scan, which just looks at the hard plaque. That's really, you know, lipids are only one small piece of mm-hmm. the, you know, the cardiovascular disease puzzle. So sure. Yeah, I, again, and you know, if you are concerned about it, the easy kind of fix is, you know, one, make sure you're you know, choosing leaner cuts of meat, lower saturated fat, you know, skew more toward maybe a Mediterranean style approach, you know, and or make sure you're getting enough soluble fiber in the diet, and, you know, make sure your thyroid is in a good place too.
Yeah. And he got those back too. He didn't run the full thing this time. but so T4 free is 0.9. So on the very lowest end of normal within their range.
Okay. Has that gone up or free, down?
It was one last time. Oh, so
basically the same.
Yeah. T3 free is the one that was low last time that he didn't run again. I'm not sure why. TSH is 1.41.
And has that gone down? It kind of sounds like it may have, but I don't recall the actual number.
Yeah. And, you know, the LDL, like you said, you know, it's up to 170 for the literature and all-cause mortality. Based on the last 15 months or so, I have no reason to think that in three more months, it won't hit that 170 if it continues on.
Yeah, hard to say.
Trajectory.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like I have somewhere, but don't have with me with the when was last time? Oh, my dear. But
the other thing is, if you're in a caloric excess, you're trying to gain weight, that can affect lipids. Whether your weight state, whether you're, you know, losing or gaining weight, that can affect lipids. So, you know, that's also something to consider here.
Okay. And remember I said too, I'd had sort of a few big steak dinners, like even a lot for me. And I consider that I have a lot of red meat and a lot of fatty meat, but about a week and a half prior to these tests, and asked if you thought that would impact them. And it sounded like, no, those numbers should recover pretty quickly. If, you know, a week and a half should be enough time, but I still have that in mind of like, could that have skewed it from.
It's possible. Everyone's different, you know, and maybe the way to really check is to, you know, run the numbers again in a month or so. Mm-hmm. And you can even just run a lipid panel and see what's going on there.
Yeah. I don't know if this was the most recent. I feel like there was another one in here, but I do have TSH. Last April was 1.27. Oh, last okay. July was 1.72. I think there was a fall one that I'm missing the paperwork okay. for, and it's not so
from
online.
July. It dropped
from July till now, it dropped a bit. Yeah.
Okay. Which, you know, is in the realm of normal fluctuations. Yeah, it's too bad they didn't run a T3.
I am not sure why. That was the one that was out of their range. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the doctor I'm seeing Wednesday. So ask him.
Yeah. Yeah, I would inquire and see if maybe he can order that. Because really, that's the thyroid hormone that it's the biologically active thyroid hormone. TSH is only telling us what your brain is sensing from a thyroid hormone perspective. So.
Okay.
And the cholesterol thyroid connection is more related to the actual thyroid hormones than TSH, but that doesn't have anything to do with it.
And the actual thyroid hormones being
too low.
Potentially. Oh, so being too low could impact the cholesterol mm-hmm. readings. Okay.
Yeah. Now I have no reason to believe, you know, your cholesterol levels went up. I don't have any reason to believe that your T3 went down. You know, especially if you've been trying to eat more, unless there's something else going on that's mm-hmm. causing, you know, your T3 to be low. But it would still be worth checking just to. Oh, because it could be a contributing factor, especially if it's remaining low.
Calorie deficit could make it appear low. Is that what you said before?
Appear what appear low?
The thyroid levels, the hormones.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So being in a caloric deficit will, you know, everyone's different and it depends on how much, but yeah, typically we see that causing some slowing of metabolism through lowering thyroid hormone.
Shouldn't be caloric deficit though. I mean, at least based on the tracking I did, but
right. Yeah. Which is why I said, like, I doubt that if anything, your T3 free should have gone up. Unless there's something else other than a caloric deficit that's potentially causing that to be low.
Mm-hmm. And there's no, it's a different topic. If I'm remaining low fat, which if I'm only going to do it for another week or so, I probably won't get anything, but I'm finding as far as getting enough calorie, because that is somewhat limiting, you know, when I don't want to go back for seconds on the meat, or if, you know, before, after a meal, if I was still hungry and, you know, sometimes I'd get a scoop of peanut butter, or like, you know, just limiting those types of things. And now I'm not doing dairy. I was doing a good bit of yogurt for protein and calories, maybe buying low fat versions of things, which gives me the heebie-jeebies. I never buy diet anything or low fat anything, but I know they exist. And, you know, in order to not halt, you know, trying the progress ish in these last, this week, I've lost a couple pounds too, right when the bowels have changed back to what they used to be when I was losing weight. So I don't know if that's related, but to not want to take a risk of going into caloric deficit. If I have to go, if I'm going to eat a bowl of yogurt, if it's fat free, it still has calories and protein.
Yeah. You are kind of left with, your protein sources and your carbohydrate sources for extra calories. And however you can, you know, maybe instead of a spoonful of peanut butter, it's a spoonful of honey, it doesn't sound appealing to me either, but
it is filling. It's like I do the peanut butter when I'm hungry, not just for calories. I could do the honey, I guess, just for calories and sugar.
Yeah. In which case, going back for more of the starchy vegetables, starches, fruits, that kind of thing. Again, you need more volume to fill you up, but, for a particular amount of calories. But yeah, it is one of the tricky things when you're trying to limit a particular macronutrient also get sufficient calories.
And during, just for a couple of weeks, if I do end up being lower protein, that's
don't worry about it.
Run.
Yeah.
And the eggs, I've been trying to, I've been pretty consistently 2 to 3 a day. So I'm a little bit trying to watch that too. I mean, I know they have some fat but I figure it's better than the handful of nuts or nut butter, and it's not the high saturated fat. So
yeah, when it comes to total fat load, I would agree.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
So Megan, one of the things I experienced the last two rounds of messing up my gut, which both seem to be, like eating things I don't normally eat, going out, maybe getting exposed to processed seed oils that I don't eat at all, is that I've gotten some pretty significant gut pain that I consider to be in my stomach or maybe my upper intestine, but not my lower intestine. And it's the kind of pain where you kind of feel like it's pretty intense, but it's not like right at this point, it's like all over the place. And I wondered if you had any thoughts about how to think about pain like that.
I mean, I would be thinking about general inflammation, especially if it's coming from, or it's coming after you're eating out, or it's coming after some like being stressed or something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
How soon after you eat does it happen?
Well, the problem is that, like, on Saturday night, it came on, like I said, on Saturday night, I ate out. I don't know how aggravating the things I ate would have been. They could have been really aggravating. They might not have been very much at all. And then I had a very stressful event that happened. And then I had gut pain. Well, the gut pain went from being sort of very sharp to being more dull. And then it basically came again in 30 minutes following eating, or an hour following eating, all day Sunday, every time I ate. So, and some of the solution, and I just didn't buckle up and do it on Sunday, seems to be for me when things are messed up, the best thing I can do is fast. Mm-hmm. Get my, bigger fast than I normally do, which is just overnight.
Yeah.
Because I think my guess is I'm sort of on the verge of eating more than my gut wants to process all the time. And when things are okay, then it's not an issue. But if things get messed up and then I continue eating that much, then it's really becomes a problem. That's my guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, so last Monday when I brought this up and talked about what I was experiencing, I was also just going into something that's happened, less than half a dozen times in the last year, but it's a real strange thing where all of a sudden it's like, rather than feeling like I have to go too often or whatever else, it's like somebody flipped a switch and nothing's moving through my gut at the speed I'm used to. And so on last Monday, like I went throughout the entire day and I don't more probably towards something normal, but like was just like, this is really weird because I don't feel like I need to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I actually had a bowel movement on Monday that was on the Bristol scale, it was probably like a 3 or a 2. It was really well formed. Like it's as well formed as it ever gets, and it had I don't know what to call it, but it was not smooth on the outside. It was kind of bumpy, or, you know, I don't know what you'd call it. Anyways, it was a little bit hard for me to, it was a little bit constipated, but it was like there was no mucus in it. There was a whole lot of things that I would say were positive too. But then, you know, the next day it's right back to somewhat messed up. And then it just seemed to get back to sort of what my normal is, but not good by 2 or 3 days later. And it's weird when I have those instances, because I can go some length of time and then start to worry that I'm going to be really constipated because I haven't gone to the bathroom. And I may be worrying too early. It may be that I'm just so used to having a system that doesn't work on the other end of the scale. But it is a strange, it's when it happens, and it's only happened, like I say, less than half a dozen times in the last year. And it usually follows sometime when I fast. So last weekend, I think there was a day when I fasted 20 hours or 18 hours between the previous night and when I ate breakfast, or when I ate my first meal, which is how I think of that's breakfast. It doesn't matter what it is or when it is, that's breakfast. So
fasting definitely slows down motility just because you don't have anything coming in. So yep. There could be something there, and maybe that kind of clues you into, well, maybe, you know, and we've talked about this before, but some or most of the problem is, you know, accelerated motility in your case. And then if you speed it, if you slow that down through fasting or, you know, however, you know, that seems to help, you know, with the stool consistency at least.
Yeah, there was Dr. Chatterjee had somebody on a podcast I listened to sometime in the last 2 weeks that was just about using fasting for health. And he had a really interesting approach because, you know, for starters, I liked everything he said to a great degree. It was, he takes the people that he's working with, and if they have any kind of issue that might lead to heart disease, and he's trying to, if it's weight gain, you know, excess weight, or if it's high glucose or glucose issues, he first moves them into real food. He doesn't try and modify how much they eat. And I thought that was really cool, because he's like, I don't want you to restrict what you eat at all, but I want you to eat all real food. And he gets them doing that for 2 weeks successfully. And then he starts having them fast, but it's usually like, it's not a consistent schedule every day. It like happens a couple days a week. He has them fast longer. And then eventually it's just an interesting thing where he's got, like he says, for most of his patients, he doesn't have fast on the weekend at all, because they're doing social things with their family or friends. And so he's like, why screw that up? Right. But during the week, it ends up like Monday, Wednesday, Friday might be two meals a day, and Tuesday and Thursday might be one meal a day. And it's just the first person I ever heard say that. And he kind of works up to it in steps. And he says, every single person, you know, he made it sound like it was absolutely universal that every person they put that on that, for if they have high blood pressure or they have weight issues, he says they almost all lose weight. They almost all, their blood pressure goes down. You know, he just had, I mean, I think he literally said all. And I just thought it was pretty interesting for, you know, this is a clinician who's clearly open to trying some stuff that isn't necessarily mainstream, right? And because fasting may be more mainstream now than it was, but it's not the go-to thing for heart disease, right? But it was interesting to me just because it was like, okay, whole food first, which I really think is great. I mean, that's really cool. You get off all the processed food. And then this fasting schedule that was not every day, was not consistent. And he sort of based it on, he was talking some about, you know, ancestral health in the process. And he says, I really don't think humans have, in the ancestral framework, had consistent food supplies, right? That they didn't eat three meals a day. So I thought that was interesting. And I kind of thought about trying to experiment with that some, and see if I could get myself to stay above 100, 110 grams of protein a day with only two meals on some days.
It's certainly worth experimenting with.
Yeah, I've never. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, from a you know, a circadian digestive standpoint, I can definitely make the argument of having regular meal times. But you know, maybe if you keep your meal times semi regular, but you just cut one of them out.
Yeah, that was kind of what he was suggesting.
That's probably going to be better than, you know, completely on those days where you're having just, you know, two meals, completely changing everything.
Yeah, no, he wasn't suggesting changing the time, just changing the eating window, basically. So whether or not you cut out the last meal of the day or the first meal of the day, just cutting one out.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't, you know, I know there's some arguments I've heard about the last meal of the day being the best one to cut out, but for me, it would be way easier to cut out the first one. So I get up in the morning, and a lot of it's psychosomatic. I think if I get up and my brain just go, I'm just going to drink water until, you know, 1 o'clock this afternoon. Usually I don't have any problem. Not every time I do it, I don't have any problem, but usually it's just like a no-brainer. By the time I get past maybe an hour past when I normally eat breakfast, I'm not even thinking about it anymore. Mm-hmm. So.
Stuart, when you had the stomach aches last weekend, you said Monday was like the well-formed bowel movements. Were the weekend, the days you had the stomach pains after eating earlier that day, did you have any like looser or larger than normal bowel movements? Or I know you typically, sounds like you have.
Looser. Oh, you know, my problem is that I typically, if I go to the bathroom less than five times a day, it's amazing. Yeah. So that's why it always really stands out when I have a day like Monday where I got up in the morning and I'm not sure I even had a bowel movement when I got up, and I didn't have a bowel movement until like right before I went to bed that night. Mm-hmm. And it was more like, and probably not a bad idea, but probably more like a fear. It was like, I got to have a bowel movement because I haven't had one in so long. It's crazy. And I probably pushed a little bit hard to get it to happen, but the results weren't, they didn't look like they in my mind was in some ways a little constipated, but in some ways better than I ever have. So
right. Just with the stomach pains, I get kind of a feeling like that, but it's usually after a meal that's later in the day after I've had a morning bowel movement that was urgent, large, loose potentially. So
yeah, in both these cases, I think there was like a pile up of food problems that created the problem. And it's probably something that I experienced much more often 15 or 20 years ago. And so it's pretty foreign now. I kind of have a feeling myself that anything that I used to experience that I haven't experienced in a while, and then I experience it, it feels worse than what I remember it from before. Because before it was just chronic. I was just living my life that way. And it was just all the time. And I think I became quite acclimated to it quite, you know, it just became the normal. And so I sort of ignored it. And now it just feels like it's somebody waving a giant red flag.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah, don't know. I think I'm going to play around more with not necessarily super strict schedule of any kind, but throwing in some two meal a day week days during the week and see what happens. So. It's probably about all I have.
Yeah, I have to jump off here in 2 minutes today too.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Megan.
You're welcome. I hope this next week is better on the gut front for both of you, and I'll look forward to updates next time.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Take care.